Recording. Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of Keys to the Jet. I'm your host, Red, and sorry we've been out of pocket for a minute, but I've had some things going on, getting some stuff done. It's okay. We're going to be all right. Here, just taking my Ozbot to where it follows my face a little bit. All right. Hope everyone is doing okay. Hope everyone is having a great, great year so far. It's almost the end of January. You believe that? Actually, I'm sorry. It's the beginning of February. I have no idea where I'm at. It's the beginning of February. This year is going to fly by just like last year. Well, buckle up and get ready. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, I hope everyone is back, getting into the groove and your normal stuff, doing what you do. I'm trying to get... Fuck, I just dropped my sody and it got all fizzy, bro. There you go. Now I don't stop. I had to get my Ozbot to stop following my face. Dude. Anyways, SMR. Hope everyone is doing okay. If this is your first time here, I'm Red. This is a podcast where we talk about airplanes and military stuff and aliens and whatever else we want to talk about. But thank you for joining us. If this is not your first time here, thank you for tuning back in and listening to me ramble on and ramble on and ramble on, blah, 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 blah. All right. Now, let's get into this cool story that I learned about not too long ago. It's actually a really cool story that happened in California. I think it was during the 1950s or 60s. During the 1950s or 60s. And let me see exactly when it happened. Pardon me if I'm breathing hard into the microphone. August 16th, 1956. Pardon me. August 15th, 1956. All right. So today we're diving into one of those aviation stories that sounds completely made up. And if you've never heard of it before, sorry, but it is 100% real, documented, and certified Cold War chaos. It's one of those moments in history where you look at the technology, you look at the people involved, you look at how much money and effort went into building these systems, and you just kind of lean back and go, yeah, that checks out. Because sometimes, even with the most advanced aircraft in the world, even with brilliant engineers, even with highly trained pilots, shit still goes sideways and in ways nobody could have predicted. And that's exactly what happened during what has come to be known as the Battle of Palmdale back in August 1956. Now, before we even get into the actual event itself, we have to set the stage properly because this whole thing makes a lot more sense when you understand the mindset of the U.S. military in the mid-1950s, you know? It was peak Cold War anxiety. The Soviet Union had nuclear weapons. The United States had nuclear weapons. Long-range bombers were the primary delivery method of weapons, and intercontinental ballistic missiles were still in their infancy. So the biggest fear were fleets of Soviet bombers coming over the polar routes, crossing into North American airspace, and dropping nuclear weapons on major cities. That fear drove absolutely everything in American air defense planning. I mean, they were nuts. So the Air Force's solution was layered defense, massive radar networks across the continent, early warning systems, command and control centers, and most importantly, interceptor aircraft whose sole job in life was to get airborne
as fast
as possible, climb as fast as possible, and shoot down bombers before they reached their targets. Or targets. These jets were not designed to dogfight. They weren't designed to loiter. They were not designed to drop bombs. They were designed to go fast in a straight line, guided by ground radar, fire missiles, and get the frick home. That philosophy during that time gave birth to the aircraft like the Convair F-106 Delta Dart. Well, let's see. The F-106 was basically the final evolution of the Century Series interceptors. Delta wing area ruled fuselage, single massive engine, capable of pushing past Mach 2, and integrated into one of the most ambitious defense networks ever created, which was the SAGE system, S-A-G-E, the semi-automatic ground environment, linked radar sites across the country to giant computers that filled entire buildings. Yeah, remember those? You don't have a Mac Mini anymore, or you didn't have a Mac Mini or a little laptop. It was like buildings full of like fucking things that made a lot of sounds and beep, boop, boop, boops. Like, remember Batman back in the day, the first Batman? Like that. And these computers would track incoming aircraft and assign interceptors automatically. allegedly. Operators could literally watch blips on a screen and see friendly fighters being guided toward targets in real time. For the 90s, this was borderline science fiction. The F-106 was also designed around missiles being the primary weapon. Guns were considered obsolete. The thinking that the future of air combat would happen at long range, beyond visual range, with radar-guided and infrared-guided missiles, so instead of hanging weapons on pylons, the F-106 carried its missiles internally in a weapons bay. The bay would open, a tray would drop down, and the missiles would fire from inside the aircraft. This kept the jet aerodynamically clean and fast. Now, I don't know how true this is, but it could be true. In practice, it relied heavily on early missile technology that was still very much a work in progress. At the same time, the Air Force needed a way to test all this stuff realistically. Simulators in the 1950s were extremely basic. You couldn't just sit in a dome with a light with a high resolution visuals and practice missile shots. ASMR. So they used real aircraft converted into target drones. Older fighters that were no longer frontline capable were stripped down, fitted with remote control systems, and flown without a pilot. Believe that shit that early, dude? They did. I mean, they do that now, you know, the QF-16, and they did that with the F-4 and everything else. Like, in the 50s, it's crazy. These drones would take off, fly a programmed or remotely controlled profile, and interceptor pilots would shoot live missiles at them. Real missiles, real explosions, real data. One of the most common drones used in this role was the QF-80, which was a converted F-80 Shooting Star. The F-80 itself was a hugely important airplane historically. It was America's first operational jet fighter and saw extensive service during the Korean War. But by the mid-1950s, it was outdated compared to the newer designs, but was still stable, predictable, and reliable. Those qualities made it perfect as a target drone. The QF-80 drone launches from the Naval Air Station Point Magoo, off the California coast. The plan is for the drone to fly inland towards designated test area while the F-106 interceptor scrambled from what is now Edwards Air Force Base to intercept and destroy it. This kind of thing had been done before. It wasn't exotic. It wasn't considered especially dangerous. Just another day in the office. Just another day of Cold War testing. Except this day decided to become legendary. Shortly after launch, the drone's control system malfunctioned. The operators at Point Magoo lost the ability to steer it. They attempted to regain control. No response. They attempted to activate the self-destruct system that was supposed to destroy the drone if something went wrong. No response. That didn't work either. So now you have an unmanned jet flying, under its own momentum, climbing and cruising inland with no pilot, no control, and no way to command it to stop. Nothing. Believe that shit? At that moment, the exercise instantly turned into an in-flight emergency. 50 officials realized the drone was headed towards populated areas of Southern California. Letting it simply continue flying until it crashed somewhere random was not acceptable. The only real option was to shoot it down over populated areas. Yeah, let's do that. So, two, F-106. Delta darts were vectored towards the rogue drone. Now, from a purely logical standpoint, this should have been easy. The F-106 was faster, more advanced, equipped with radar, and armed with guided missiles. The QF-80 was a straight-wing subsonic jet designed in the 90s. I mean, it was old technology. And not maneuvering aggressively, not employing countermeasures, not doing anything clever or, like, outmaneuvering these guys. It was literally just flying. The first 106 pilot got into position, achieved a radar lock, and fired a missile. And he missed. That in itself was not shocking. Early missiles missed a lot. Reliability rates in that era were nowhere near what we expect today. But it still wasn't ideal. The pilot maneuvered for another shot. Second missile. Fired. Second missile. Missed. Again. Maybe this guy doesn't know how to shoot down airplanes. Maybe he's never shot one down before. Now, attention levels in the control room are going up. I mean, people are probably, like, bouncing off the wall, spilling their coffee and shit, like, great God, Dolores, and slapping their mama and their wives and shit. Third missile was fired. It was a miss. A fourth missile was fired, and this was a miss again. Holy shit, four missiles. At this point, things are no longer amusing. You've got a drone still cruising along, two interceptors burning fuel, and multiple missiles that have just flown off into the desert. Flown off into the desert and flown off and impacting terrain. One of those missiles detonated on the ground and started a brush fire. Way to go. Then another missile impacted and started another fire. Within minutes, multiple wildfires were burning across the areas of North Los Angeles. You're welcome. So now, not only do you have a runaway drone problem, but you also have a wildfire problem that exists purely because you tried to solve the runaway drone problem. And guess what? The drone is still going. Somewhere in the middle of this, someone inevitably brought up the AIR genie. And if you guys don't know what that is, the genie was an unguided nuclear air-to-air rocket carried by some interceptors of the era. Wow. Excuse me. It had a nuclear warhead with a relatively small yield designed to be fired into formations of bombers. You didn't need precision. You just need to get close enough and let the blast radius do the fucking work. Yeah, like a early version of spray and pray. Just, I mean, hell yeah. Now, while the idea of detonating a nuclear weapon over Southern California technically existed in someone's mind for at least a few seconds, it was never seriously considered. Even in the 1950s, that was a hard no. So the pilots continued trying with conventional missiles. They continued missing. I want to know, though, like, exactly, like, how many missiles were these airplanes carrying? And if they only carried a certain amount, then there were more than two airplanes up there. There had to be a bunch of airplanes up there trying to shoot down one drone. And here's, eventually, the F-106s simply ran out of missiles. And they had no guns because guns were considered obsolete. So now you have supersonic interceptors flying alongside a rogue drone. Could it be more than two?
Pardon me, am I breathing hard in the mic?
With absolutely nothing left on board that can shoot it. At that point, the only thing left to do was to monitor the drone and hope it ran out of fuel somewhere that wouldn't kill anyone, which is exactly what happened. QF-80 eventually flamed out and crashed in a remote desert area. No fatalities. ASMR. No direct injuries. The drone was destroyed not by missiles, but by gravity and physics. Because what goes up must come down, right? The fires, however, continued to burn. It had to be fought by firefighters on the ground. Thus ended the Battle of Palmdale. No enemy aircraft destroyed. No aerial victory. Millions of dollars in missiles expended. Thousands of acres burned. I don't know if it was thousands, but many, many acres burned. And one drone that refused to die until it felt like it. Now, with all this happening, here's where it gets kind of interesting and kind of shitty at the same time. This event did not result in mass firings or court martials. Nobody went to prison. Nobody got publicly crucified. Instead, the Air Force did what it always does, allegedly, when confronted with uncomfortable truths. Pardon me. They studied it. They wrote reports. They analyzed missile performance, looked at radar tracking issues, and examined drone control systems. They quietly acknowledged that maybe relying exclusively on missiles was not the best idea. And over the next several years, fighters start getting guns again. Weird. Because sometimes simple works. Sometimes a 20-millimeter cannon solves problems that a million-dollar missile can't. Missile technology improved dramatically over the time. Seekers got better. Guidance logic got better. Reliability improved. And testing became more rigorous. Drone systems became more robust with multiple redundant termination methods. And all of those improvements were influenced, at least a little bit, by embarrassing episodes like the Battle of Palmdale. And that's an important point. The Battle of Palmdale isn't a story about incompetence. It's a story about growing pains within the military aviation or military system, right? The United States was inventing modern air defense from scratch. There was no blueprint. There was no historical precedent for continent-wide radar networks, computer-controlled intercepts, and guided missile air combat. They were figuring it out in real time. And sometimes that meant breakthrough successes, and sometimes that meant failures and accidentally starting wildfires. Both apparently are part of this growing pain and growing process. Now imagine being one of these pilots. You trained your whole career to intercept Soviet bombers. You finally get a real live intercept, and you can't hit a straight flying drone. You land knowing that this story is going to follow you forever. And you know, here's one of the parts I genuinely love about this story. Despite how ridiculous it sounds, it directly contributed to making aviation safer and more effective in the long run. Failures teach us lessons, the successes never will. And the Battle of Palmdale helped push the Air Force towards balanced armament, better testing, better redundancy, and healthier skepticism about new technology. Modern fighters carry missiles. They also carry guns, except the F-35B model, allegedly. Modern drones have multiple kill switches, I think. These improvements exist because early generations ate the embarrassment so later generations wouldn't have to. So when you hear the Battle of Palmdale and laugh, that's fine. You should laugh. It's pretty funny, but I also recognize that it represents a messy, imperfect, very human process of technological evolution. A process that eventually gave us the ability to put a missile through a specific window from miles away. And not bad for a lineage that once couldn't hit a drone flying straight. And honestly, that's aviation in a nutshell, you know? Got a lot of crazy aspects to it. Beautiful, brilliant, and occasionally on fire. It's the story of the Battle of Palmdale. The Battle of Palmdale. I think it's kind of funny that people couldn't shoot stuff down. They were like trained to, and they couldn't shoot shit down. Kind of funny. Ew. ASMR. Excuse me. I got something going on today, you guys. I've been kind of sick the last week. My kids got me sick, so here I am. I'm still on here getting stuff done. All right, let's do This Day in Aviation. Hopefully, it'll talk about some cool stuff here. It's February 7th, 1984. During mission STS-41B, NASA astronaut Captain Bruce, United States Navy, left the Space Shuttle Challenger on the first untethered spacewalk. Whoa! That's crazy, dude. Let's see. It's February 7, 1964. The Beatles arrived in America at JFK International Airport from London aboard Pan American Flight 101, a Boeing 707. Wow. They were welcomed by an estimated 4,000 fans and 200 journalists. I mean, I guess that's a good day in aviation, right? See what else is going on here. Sorry, I should have been more prepared. Hope everyone's having a great freaking day. Let's see. Nothing really substantial happened, so don't worry about it. Whoa. Okay. Let's go to some news. Here is some news in the Air Force Times. F-22s pulled from Super Bowl flyover due to operations, planner says. Yeah, buddy. Look closely at the commemorative flight suit patch for Super Bowl LX and you'll notice. I'm sorry. I'm doing the wrong voice. This is a report. This is supposed to be a reporter voice, right? Okay, stand by. Look closely at the commemorative flight suit patch for Super Bowl LX and you'll notice that what appears to be an anomaly. While the military aircraft flyover on Sunday is set to include Air Force B-1 Lance Bombers and F-15C Eagle Fighters alongside Navy F-A-18 Super Hornets and F-35C Lightning Fighters, the patch includes silhouettes of another advanced fighter jet, the Air Force F-22. According to a planner for the flyover, this is not a mistake, but evidence of operational needs take priority. Katie Spencer, the sports outreach program manager for the Department of the Air Force, said the initial flyover plan included a pair of F-22s to showcase the most advanced jets flying for both services. We want to... Hold on. Let me do... Okay. Sorry, guys. I was going to do a voice for... Let me find one. Quote, we wanted fifth-generation aircraft from the Air Force, fifth-generation aircraft from the Navy. Spencer told Military Times on Friday interview, but as things happening in our military, you know, operational tempo has increased, so the F-22s got pulled for some operational assignments. While Spencer did not go into details about operational needs, the F-22s in June played a key role in Operation Midnight Hammer, B-2 spare bombers led strike campaign on Iranian nuclear facilities. Bro, I thought those were F-18s, dude. I saw Top Gun 2, dude. I saw them practice that, bro. I saw them practice that in Top Gun 2. So that's what they did. It was the greatest most superest technological thing ever. I do a really bad impression. Anyways, so no F-22s are going to be flying over the Super Bowl. Sorry, guys. No way. No way anyone would have thought this. Hold on. Let me get my bearing here. Wearing smart glasses and uniform jeopardizes OPSEC, Air Force says. No fucking way. No way does that do that. No way. No way, no way. U.S. Air Force prohibiting use of smart glasses while airmen are on uniform. Cite security concerns. In addressing appearance policy update, the service banned the use of smart glasses with photo, video, or artificial intelligence capabilities while in uniform. January 9th memo did not specifically list the reasons behind the move, but an Air Force spokesperson told Military Times Friday the change being made for operational security purposes. Yeah, great. Cool, can't wear glasses. Can't wear those things, those glasses things. Let's see what else. Finding solid, let's see. The U.S. Coast Guard's newest weapon in border security? Jet skis, dude. Jet skis, bro. I'm gonna read this, like, okay. All right. Dude, personal watercrafts dip in the water. The sun glints off its fiberglass deck, bro. There's no Kenny Powers, but the sound of silence rings out from where? That's between the Coastie and his maker. In its ever-evolving fight on the U.S.-Mexico border, the U.S. Coast Guard has unveiled its latest tool, the jet ski. Dude, firstly utilized in 2024, rescue swimmer Stan, team members, as well as the Coast Guard auxiliary, Coasties have begun jet ski training off the shores of San Diego, California, as a competitive, nearly implemented efforts to shore up America's southwest borders, bruh. Dude, at the time of the publication, the service did not get back to Military Times regarding the deployment of a humble jet ski, but a January 14th Coast Guard video finds Coasties riding the waves around San Diego in sleek, powerful, all-black jet skis, bruh. Yeah, dude. Yeah. Wow. Wow. The hunt for container launchers, packed with drones, kicked off by Pentagon. I mean, the U.S. military wants proposals for containerized systems that can launch and recover a mixture of drone swarms on land and sea. That's fucking cool. The entire U.S. military is now pushing to acquire hundreds of thousands of, if not millions, of new drones, especially smaller types, in the coming years. Spread by the direction from the Pentagon, in turn, demand for containerized launchers. Dude, learn how to fly a drone, bro. If you want to get into a new career field and make some fucking money here in the future, it's going to be the military and police that are going to need people that are going to, and they'll pay money for you to fly fucking drones. I'm telling you, dude, Metro, like Las Vegas Metro, they're paying people already. They're paying people like a fucking 100 G's a year to fucking fly drones, dude. But to be a drone pilot, $100,000. You want to fly drones for Las Vegas Metro? You go do that. That's what you do. Get your fucking Part 107 from the FAA. Learn to fly some drones. And then get in there, dude. Make your bread. Get your bread up. You know what I mean? I just don't know how they, like, track it. You know what I mean? Or, like, how many hours they would require. Oh, yeah, you're required, like, fucking 2,000 hours. How do you track that? It's a notebook. I flew my drone today for 2 hours. Then they're going to be like, hey, man, let's see your logbook, dude. You know what I mean? You fucking just give them this, like, little shitty notebook. Yeah, it's got about 2,000 hours in here, boss. And I got my Part 107. You hire me? You going to hire me? Well, hell, strap on that drone right there. You know? Send in a building. Fight fire with fire. All right, dudes, you know I love you guys. I don't want to stay longer, but I'm going to get the frick out of here. All right, let's recap what we talked about today. What are we talking about today? Do you remember? Go ahead. I'm listening. Go ahead. I'll wait. That's right. That's right. We talked about the Battle of Palmdale, where they tried to shoot down a freaking drone over the desert. Couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. I was your best one. I couldn't do it. What else did we talk about? There was nothing on this day in aviation. Nothing. What else? That's right. That's right. We did talk about jet skis in Kabul. Yeah. And that's right. Yeah. You're right. All right, guys. Again, I'm going to get out of here. I love you. Thank you for following us. If it's your first time here, thank you for listening to all the way to the end. I love you. Please join us. Keep going and listening to more. this isn't your first time here and you follow me and listen to me all the way to the end, you are my hero. Remember, you can follow us on all of the social medias. You can follow us on YouTube. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, TikToks, pretty much everywhere. We're everywhere. We're fucking everywhere, dude. Okay. Also, if you'd like to, you could become a patron. And speaking of patrons, I love you guys. Thank you, patrons. You guys are leading the way. Tip of the spear. Goodyear, Freaky Freeland, the mayor. Fuck you, Cody and Gregory. Dude, I love you guys. I'm gonna get out of here. How many times have I said that already? Check this out. I got a camera. It's a 360 camera, which means I'm gonna go to somewhere with airplanes. Go look at airplanes and get videos of airplanes. Yeah. Also, like when I start flight training, I wanna fucking put that on video. And so that way everybody could see it and do stuff and say, hey, Red, you shouldn't be in that airplane. I'm gonna say, you're right. Then I'm gonna say, you're wrong, and then I'm gonna fly that motherfucker. Just like that. I'm getting out of here. Fucking love you guys. Peace out.